Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
At the end of last week's show, I said I was going to have Jeffrey Givens on the show, who is that wonderful woman who not only has an amazing singing voice, but went from being the shyest and basically an $8 an hour employed person to quite a success with lots of career lessons. Got a ton of great email loving her as a guest, and so we're going to have her back. I couldn't have her on today, but I will have her on May 13th, and so listen for that. And also, that is going to be a little heads up. You know, I like to give a thank you gift for people who pledge some serious bucks to KELW during my hour on the pledge drive, and a premier seating, or premium seating, I guess, for her next concert will be the premium, and that concert will be on June 17th, so just a little heads up about that. I just came back from New York visiting my mom, who's 89 or 87, depending upon which birth certificate you believe. You know, thank God she's doing reasonably well. Not great, but, you know, at that age, you're grateful for just about everything. But it did remind me, she was a stay-at-home mom, as was so common in those days. My dad was just a killer worker, Holocaust survivor, and for him, work really helped him heal, helped him not focus on the past. As I've said so many times ad nauseum on the show, the most powerful words he ever said to me were, Martin, never look back, always look forward. But he's also taught me a lot of other lessons. And so I thought, as I was riding on the plane coming back here, I said, what should I do today with my dear listeners, you, here on KLW this morning, Work with Marty Nemko? And so I thought I would share a couple more lessons about work that my dad taught me. But I would right away give out the phone number, invite you to call in. And if you have a lesson or two that you'd like to share with us that you learned from your mom or your dad, that'd be great. I'm calling this little segment Lessons I Learned from My Parents About Work. So this is the time to call when there are lines available. So the phone number for that, or if you'd like a three-minute career makeover, I'm always happy to help you with any work problem you may have. If you'd like a three-minute workover, career makeover, whatever you want to call it, or you want to share a lesson you learned from your parent about work, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Well, certainly one of the most, a lot of the lessons my father taught me, he didn't explicitly say, Martin, this is a lesson. No, it was his actions that spoke, as they say, louder than words. So, you know, he worked originally in a factory sewing shirts. And then later, when he saved up enough money to own his own store, the only thing he could afford was in the worst possible neighborhood, and he couldn't afford a car, so he would have to take a bus and two trains and then walk 6 blocks. Remember, New York, it's snowing and cold and disgusting in the winter and hot and sweltering in the summer. But he would do that 6 days a week, and on the seventh day, he would go to shop to buy stuff for his store, the little clothing store. So he convinced me, he showed me through his actions that work is really important. It is what makes you worthy. My mom did, and you know, even though both my parents were Holocaust survivors who grew up in a tenement in the Bronx, my father, in working so hard, was able to let us move to a bottom half of a duplex, two-family apartment in Queens, in Flushing, Queens, kind of a blue-collar neighborhood, just working his butt off with no education, no horrible English. And provide for my mom, enabled her, and I'm not sure it's really the wisest thing cosmically, but enabled her to basically sit on her, you know, to just stay home all the time. And it wasn't a full-time job taking care of us, my sister and I. But it certainly enabled him to be very productive to his customers, to my mom, and certainly bring up my sister and I. So he really made me believe that even menial work was extremely valuable, and there's no excuses. That was very important for me. I'll share some more later, but we have callers on the line, but let me give out the phone number again. There are two reasons I invite you to call. Number one, if you'd like to share a lesson you learned from your mom or dad about work, or if you need some work help, I may not be your dad, but I can perhaps offer you some useful advice. The phone number for either reason, 415 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What is your question or comment? Hello, it is you.
Hello, Marty, this is Warren Farrell.
Oh, Warren Farrell. So nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you, too. I'm inspired by your question because I think my most important experience with my father was when we lived in Europe when I was about 14 and 15, my mother got very depressed, and she didn't like being out of the United States, and although my father loved it and worked very hard at managing a company in Europe, he was willing to give up his position there, came back to the United States, and ended up going into, he was older, so he was in his 50s, so he couldn't get a job in those years. He wore valued once you were past mid-50s. And he just walked the streets selling full of brushes, mm-hmm. And went from being top executive to being an everyday salesperson, and said that he would rather do that and give up the position and exchange that for having the family be together and have my mom be happy. And so I was always really very impacted by that.
So the lesson you learned was that family trumps work.
Yeah, in a sense, probably the opposite. In a sense, we could learn to some degree the opposite function of work. And as you know from our friendship, keeping work in balance with my life has always been a key issue to the books I write and things like mm-hmm. that. So it's interesting how sometimes our past has a deep impact on our professions, even though we may justify our professions through a larger ideology.
Yeah, no question. It really is amazing how how impactful our parents are in terms of the way in which we function in life.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. By the way, I did email you my next Atlantic column, which is about men, and my editor at the Atlantic challenged me with the question. He said he really kind of a little bit manipulated situation. He always comes up with a question that he poses to the readers and to me, and one is our economy sexist? Which, of course, the implicit thing is that it is sexist against women. But he asked me to write a piece about it, so he wrote the initial piece, which was very pro-woman slanted, and I've written a fair and appropriate pro-male piece. I send it to you. I hope you'll take a look at it.
Well, I'll be happy to. It'd be my delight.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your calling, Warren.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for your big question.
Good. You take care. Okay. I'll give out the phone number again. Have you learned a lesson from your mom or your dad about work? My real fantasy would be that you'd share something that isn't, some obvious cliche like it's important to work hard, but maybe something that only a parent would tell you that might be fascinating. So if you're willing to share that or any kind of question related to work, lesson related to work that you learned from your parents, or if you'd like some work help from me, you can call for either of those reasons. The phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another tip I learned from my father was never let pride get in the way. He was so hell-bent on supporting his family. And he was, he wasn't a saint, but he was pretty darn ethical. I think if we lined up all the people in the world, he'd probably be at about the 80th percentile of ethics, especially among self-employed business people. But he also recognize that, all of it was falling on his shoulders. By the way, before I forget, that was quite heroic, what Warren Farrell's father did. And yet men don't get credit for that. To think that he was running a company in Europe and he chose to give it up because his wife was unhappy and he sold Fuller Brush door to door. For those of you who are too young to know what Fuller Brush salesmen were, guys who just went door to door with some brushes selling, would you like to buy a hairbrush? Those in my mind are heroes, but we don't hear about them these days, and there's something cosmically wrong about that. Anyway, back to my father's story. I've told this once before on the show, but since the topic today is about lessons we learned from our parents, as I said, every Sunday he would go to buy the clothing wholesale for the stores. Of course, being a very small store, the wholesalers he went to were these little holes in the wall in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And he would go into that store, And he would say, well, I need, you know, 6 dozen shirts, you know, 1 dozen in this size, 1 in that size, you know, et cetera. And the owner of the little store would give him a price. And my father would, unless he knew it was really a great price, he would say, can you give me, what's the best you can do? You negotiate. And then whatever it is that the store owner said was the best he could do, my father would often, unless it was really clearly a great deal, he would walk out. Why? Because he knew that if the owner let my father walk out, it means that my father had already gotten a pretty darn good price. So what would happen would be, if the owner would let my father walk out, my father would then come back in the store and say, all right, I'll give it to you. That showed me that pride, and I guess that the right term, the biblical term is pride goes before the fall. Pride serves no purpose. Pride is all about ego. And I've generalized from that principle. When I see how many people go into careers not because they love it, not because it was meant to, you know, it was what they were meant to do or whatever. They become corporate lawyers or bond traders or insurance salesmen or whatever because of the prestige and or the money. But especially the prestige, those who become like lawyers and drive Beamers because of this thing called, or they buy a house in Piedmont that is no nicer than a house 50 yards into Oakland. That's pride. That's shallow pride. So the most important lesson for me, an important lesson my father taught for me is never do anything for pride. Yes, pride in the quality of your work, of course. That's a different story. But, you know, don't let your ego get in the way. So anyway, those are my thoughts. And now I look at the phone lines and, oh, my God, I'm so happy. All the lines are lighted up. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi, my name is Robert. You know, it's funny that you should mention pride because I was thinking when I was growing up, the pride that we had for people who worked out in the community was the service that they provided.
Right, good. That's different. That's great.
You know, it was like I really admired the mailman because he carried the mail to everybody.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
But I, you know, one of the things that my father taught me about work, because I watched my father. My father was a union laborer,
mm-hmm.
And he went in the labor union at a time when the labor unions were really quite racist and didn't want black people coming in. And so every day he's dealing with not only the racism from his coworkers, but also from the carpenters who laborers are supposed to aid. And so and I watched my father go to this job day after day, and you know, because he had to support us, and God bless him, he did do that.
Mm.
You know, but one thing that I learned watching my father give his blood, sweat, and tears, and then eventually when he retired from the laborers union, I think he died about 5 years after that. So, but the thing I learned is that I personally do not want a job that helps to support the system that's grinding me down. Now this takes a whole new a way of looking at work and what is productive and what needs to be done. But when we look at the situation in the world, especially the economical world, I think it's time that we the people start disconnecting from that system that is oppressing us and start getting jobs and teaching our children how to grow fruit, how to grow food, how to kill and dress out a raccoon, you know, because I think we're going to probably need that kind of stuff. But the whole idea of what a job is, I believe has to change if we are going to have any type of change in this world. And I think that, as you say, there are no menial jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Everything should work towards the whole, you know. But I really think that you know, we really need to look at, you know, as you're talking about corporate lawyers or whatever, and look at what does the job that these people do, how does it affect the community?
May I ask what kind of work you do?
Right now, I'm retired military. I'm looking around. I think I'm going to do a lot of concentrating on volunteering with the Iraqi vets that are coming back, because I had an opportunity to meet some of them, and these young men and women are true veterans, and they're in bad shape. I think that we're about to see, you know, the true results of Bush's Afghanistan and Iraqi war, and they're going to be living on our streets, and these people are going to need help. And so I think the best job that I could do is to be out there for them, because you know what? There's going to be a lot of pressure when these guys get out, and you're not going to be able to stop the explosion. The best thing you can do is try to direct it, you know, towards a positive piece. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there are a lot of jobs that are available to the people. But I think that we have to look at how our jobs affect the community, and are we doing something positive?
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little unusual that a guy who's got, you know, you're clearly very liberal sensibilities, has spent his life in the military. You said you don't want to be a part of the system. Do you feel the military is part of the enemy, part of the bad system? Do you like them? What are your thoughts as a liberal who spent his life in the military? What are your thoughts about the military?
Well, my thoughts about the military. I was actually in the military for 2 years. I'm a Vietnam era vet. I never saw any action. And those 2 years have I've been able to net some medical. I have a small retirement. You know, I'll never get rich with it, but it helped me in that. But the military in general, you know, I really haven't come to a conclusion. I think that what the military does is wrong. I think the military could be a force for good if it was used correctly. It's kind of like a friend of mine was telling me about an old symbol that the alchemists used to use, and it's a monkey with a knife, and which means that this thing, whatever the monkey with the knife symbol has on it, means that it can go either way. It could be good or it could be bad, you know. And I think that's the same thing with the military.
Well, it was good that you called, and so I thank you very much for the call. All our lines are lighted up, so we're going to go back. You know, I always do like to provide balance, at least my own perspective in response to his. You know, I have gone from being an out-and-out socialist to being an absolute libertarian. And in my entering old age, and I like to think I have another 30 years left, but at least at this stage, I've become very much a moderate. I think that if we only act for the community, there is a dissipation of one's motivation. It ends up, some people will always, till the day they die, they'll be give. But just like there's this term called donor fatigue, there is, you know, generosity fatigue, there is community fatigue, because very often, some people who give, in the end, the rest of the community is not willing to join in. Nobody could argue against the liberal idea, let's make for a better world. But unfortunately, some significant component of humankind is just not motivated that way. And yet we can't only be purely selfish and say, oh, well, I'm going to go and get what I can for me. So in the end, I think that cosmically, the greatest good accrues from a society that does reward individual initiative, but also that keeps in mind the common good. And that's why I really love the Hazel Henderson triple bottom line. I think we should all be thinking about, yes, people, profits, and planet. Profits is not a dirty word in itself. It's motivating. It creates a lot of drive and energy to create things. But yes, people count, and the planet counts too. One guy's opinion. Look about the phone number again. If you either want to share a lesson related to work that you learned from your mom or your dad, or you would like a 3-minute career makeover from me because you're struggling in any, you know, you can be highly successful. I have a lot of clients from, you know, who are extraordinarily successful and nonetheless feel struggling. They are unhappy in one way or another. So whatever your station in life, which used to be one of KALW's mottos, I welcome your work-related call, question, or lesson you learned from your mom or your dad related to work. Phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
I can't tell. Am I on
yes.
the air? Oh, wonderful, and I'll try to make it quick. Yeah, memories of my father, born in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Huh? I just went there for Polish food just yesterday. I love it.
Oh, my gosh, I so much want to visit there, and I was born in Queens. But when I was a little kid, my father moved us out from New York City to southern New Mexico in the mountains.
Mm.
And I'll call you some other time for a work consultation. It's funny the things years later that you realize,
right.
And I thought of this for years. My father, and he was born August 17, and, you know, he'd be in his 90s, and he worked very hard. My mother was going to hospitals on and off since I was 9, and my dad never left our family.
Mm.
He worked very hard. I'm not saying he was perfect. He had been in the military. There was the father there, but, you know, an emotional disconnect. But I thought, my goodness, I'm interested in psychology since I've been a child, and I could be a counselor with men and for men in partnership because I have many brothers, and how much they were taught to hold in and bottle up. And then I thought, well, no wonder the temper, I'm not making an excuse, it's like a pressure cooker, you know, because you have a right to feel. And so I love listening to what you say, and it just took years, maybe it started about 10 years back with me understanding some things about my father. He very much believed in education. He always was studying something new. Before he died in his 80s, he started taking classes in short story writing.
Mm. You know, I want to interrupt you. It's wonderful, the feminine side and all of that. It is conventional wisdom that the reason that men bottle it up is because they can't communicate or can't get in touch with their feelings. But there is a very different approach, and it's true of many men, including me. I have learned over the years that talking it out and processing it usually not only doesn't make it better, it makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because then all the negative stuff, the worrisome stuff, becomes top of mind. For example, I just said at the top of the show, I came back from New York visiting my mom, who's older, and, you know, anybody who's 89 is going to have issues. And the more I think about it, the more depressed I am. Because I'm doing everything I can for her within reason, without sacrificing my life. And yet, talking about it, processing it, would only make it worse. Men are not so stupid as many would have all of us believe. We sometimes realize that while it may be a short-term feel-good to express your feelings, it doesn't mean if you, quote, bottle it up, that it's going to come out in fury some other way.
No, am I still on the air, Marty?
You sure are.
I didn't express what's exactly in my heart because, you know, I relate to both. We have both within us, I'm convinced. I don't mean anything relating to who's gay, who's not. That's
mm-hmm.
none of my business. Live and let live. I don't cry easily. And I have that woman warrior in me, and no, I didn't mean to convey that. Even that's become admirable. I don't speak about things easily, and I choose my words carefully, and I'll write it out first, and I always... Choosing carefully and not putting someone on the defensive is important to me, not just blurting out and saying, you know, but I do believe in going for nonviolent communication and healing communication.
It's hard to argue with that. I'm going to interrupt you because we've got a lot of calls.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
When's the show again? Repeat it because I missed some of it.
Oh, it's going to be, it's archived on the, just go to KALW.org.
Okay.
And within, I don't know, a few hours, I guess, after the show, and it's there forever.
And
it's also on the NPR website, for a while.
And thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
You know, I do like the idea of androgyny, that all of us have a male and a female side. I think the most macho person, ultimately, like her father would you know, go and take, you know, to creative writing classes in their 80s. I think it's good for all of us. You know, but I think right now we are only honoring, the mainstream is only honoring women's ways of being. Collaboration is good, competition is bad. Individual boldness is considered cowboy. Or being a workaholic, working really long and hard and focused and not having balance is denigrated. There really is room for somebody who is a workaholic. That should be called a hero, who's willing to kill himself, and very often it's literally, for himself, for his family, for society, whatever. but there's also room for gentleness. The traditional, of course, there's tremendous, any kind of gender stereotype is going to be, you know, have millions of exceptions. But there is room for the traditionally nurturing and emotion-centric approach that many women, but not all, tend to have. But I think we need to honor men's ways of being and women's ways of being. The most evolved people are those that have strong male sides and female sides, whatever their X chromosomes or Y, you know, whether XX chromosomes or XY chromosomes. Anyway, I'm giving out the phone number again. You want a three-minute career makeover? Happy to do that for you if you need any kind of career help. I can usually give you at least a baby step forward and sometimes maybe even transform your life. It's happened occasionally. On this show, certainly the price is right. I like to call it zero, zippo, nada. Or if you have a lesson you want to share about work that you got from your mother or your father, I would welcome hearing that. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I think what I'll do is also share another lesson from my father before I go back to the phones. He taught me something that is ever more true today. And it was really what that first caller who said he doesn't want to work for the system. It is true that in almost any situation where there's an employer and an employee, the employer is going to try to get the worker to work for as little as possible. And that's going to mean that if you are a wage slave, you're not going to do that well unless you're a superstar. Sure, if you have a rare skill set and, you know, you're brilliant and you're a driven workaholic and you won't spend any time doing anything but work, yes, an employer will pay you a reasonable amount, but they're still trying to pay you as little as they can get away with. And so being self-employed is something that my father didn't tell me to be self-employed, but he made clear that he was his guy. He didn't speak any English. You know, he was not prepossessing, had no education, no nothing. He's not handsome. We share that quality. And yet he made, despite that, and being a survivor of the Holocaust and all those tortures, the guy made a middle class, never got rich certainly, but he certainly made a solid middle class living. So much that my mom has a couple of fur coats in her closet. I went, as I said, I just came back from visiting my mom. And so self-employment is often the way to, especially if you're not going to be seen as a god or a goddess to the employers of the world. You don't have a degree from Harvard. You do have gaps in your employment. You're not driven. You're a normal person with flaws like a rose. You got thorns and you got beautiful flower, both. It may be that the path to economic self-sufficiency, especially in these very tough economic times, is, as I've said this ad nauseum, so I'm not going to go into details, but simple low-risk self-employment. Finding a simple business, whether it's a soup cart or a shoeshine stand or a flower stand or a simple business, create a simple business and then clone it. Hire your friends and relatives to run clones of that business. That can often be a way that even if you don't have a lot of money to invest, the way to economic self-sufficiency so you don't get fired, so you don't have to worry about getting fired. And, you know, while I have things I like about Obama, there's things I hate about Obama. Honestly, it's a strong word, but I do. Because he's just such a big fan of redistribution, and I worry about redistribution a lot. But one thing that will certainly help you if you want to be self-employed is in the next few years, there will be health care for all. And therefore, one of the big impediments to self-employment has been health care. And that will cease to be such an impediment under Obamacare. So yet one more reason to consider self-employment. Remember also, when we're in such a global economy, you're not just competing with other workers. But the employer has that sword of Damocles that he or she can hang over your head saying, if you don't want to do it, I'll send the job to India or Pakistan or Vietnam or Mexico or whatever. And technology is getting ever better, ever more likely to replace a human being. I mean, the most vivid example for me is appraisers. Banks used to hire hundreds of appraisers to go driving around and appraise properties. Now most of it, or a lot of it certainly, is done by computer. So, you know, the employer's got a lot of cards. So you can do a jujitsu, you can do a flip of the power by you being the boss. Although I will ask you, and it's easier for me to say than to do, but if you do hire people, try to people with at least give them a living wage and listen to them and treat them with respect and get their input, the business will be better as a result. Anyway, phone number for either a 3-minute career makeover. Or if you want to share a lesson you learned about work from your mom or your dad, or, you know, it doesn't have to be a biological mom or dad, somebody, you know, who was close to you family-wise. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco at KALW, 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Hello?
Yep.
Hello. So thanks for taking the call.
Pleasure.
I have a lesson that I learned from, I'm just about 40 years old, and right when I was kind of launching into my career, approaching 20 years ago now, my dad, who, I grew up with my parents divorced from the time I was a young child, but, living nearby and kind of, had a pretty good relationship with my dad, but not close, emotionally, just kind of like a, hey, how's it going, son? Looking good. That's a relationship. Uh-huh. And he was an attorney, and, worked a lot and did the whole thing, like became a partner in a small firm and really excelled and continues to excel, and was the first person in his family to have any sort of white-collar, professional. I believe he was the first college graduate, and certainly was the first one to, to work at a desk and in an office building and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And what he told me shortly before I graduated from college was, you need to define ambition and success on your own terms. I believe were the exact words that he used. Mm-hmm. And he made it very clear that his, he understood that it was the only time I ever heard him acknowledge this, and he put his finger on it. He said, I know I'm not a great, I'm not the most emotional, expressive guy, and, it's not that I don't feel things, and it's not that I don't love you and your sister and other people. I just, I know I'm not great at getting that across. I'm not particularly adept at supporting people in that way, and I made a decision a long time ago that I thought what I could do was the thing that I could give, and the thing that I wanted to set out to do was have a very financially successful career that would enable my children to do things and have kind of a comfort zone in life that nobody in our family had enjoyed before.
Yeah.
And he did that. He did that. Not wildly, not like extravagantly. We never lived extravagantly, but that comfort zone exists. Now for me and for my child who's now growing up, and we have sort of some breathing room financially, thanks to his success in that arena that never existed in our family in prior generations.
Yeah. And so how do you define success now in your own terms? You said you define...
Well, and that's the interesting thing, I think, is that I had started to identify long before I've got an almost five-year-old now, and who's about to run in the room. And long before that, I sort of started to realize that I didn't want to do that sort of thing. Like I went to college and even went to business school and like have all of that sort of stuff, not fancy schools, but the degrees are there that sort of put me statistically in a category that's unusual. And I work, and I've had a very professional career, but mostly in the nonprofit world. Mm-hmm. And I've found that it's been extremely rewarding for me to strike a balance between doing what I consider to be, professional, career-driven, challenging work that's in my field of study, which is kind of marketing and communications, but also in organizations that really I find deeply satisfying and in line with my values and all of that sort of thing. And also, this is maybe the real crux, allow me a pretty great balance between being a professional employee and a father and husband. And that was something I knew before I was either a father or a husband that I always wanted to find, was that sort of balance.
Yep.
And I've it's always sort of an ongoing thing and a moving target, but I feel pretty good about it. Yep. And frankly, not feeling that sort of pressure to
be like your dad
and to be a high flyer, yeah, and to make tons of money and all of that, like knowing that it was like, I mean, I think I'm a stubborn and strong enough person that I would have followed my own footsteps anyway, I think, but it's nice to know that there isn't that sort of parental question, like, oh, you know, am I living, am I, like, the fact that I decided, you know, what's important to me, and I actually have sort of a different skill set, I don't know that I've frankly got what it takes to be a hotshot big-time lawyer. And those are real thing. Like, that's, I don't look down. I don't know that I could have done that.
I want to thank you for the call, because we are just, we do have a lot of calls, and I want to thank you for the call. Of course, what's interesting is the kind of the common thread among so many of these callers is, like this guy's father, so many of them were unsung heroes, and they just worked really hard, which provided so much freedom. In this case, for this guy, who by his own admission is not the hot shot, and yet because he's got the cushion of inheritance that he got from his father, or not inheritance, but money that obviously he's gotten from his father, he's had the freedom to pursue his route, which is, despite not being a superstar, to work in the nonprofits, which he likes, and have plenty of time for his family life, etc. I mean, his father is a hero. And yet his father said that he was, he felt sorry that he wasn't able to communicate emotionally, and he was apologetic for that. You know, do we have people who are apologizing because they don't work hard? No, they tend to not. You know, somehow being able to express your emotions is like this must. And I think that's a narrative that needs to be reevaluated. There are different ways in the world. Some of us earn our existence primarily through our working our guts out. Others, primarily by being the emotional facilitator. And there, while there's many gender exceptions, generally it is the men who try to justify their existence by working their butts off. And instead of being described as heroic, they're described as, workaholics or unable to express their feelings. And I think just like we wouldn't want women to be denigrated because they're not driven hard workers, I certainly think we need to honor men in that regard. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Would that be me?
It is.
Oh, okay. This is Janice in Berkeley, and I haven't heard anybody mention this kind of problem with one's parents. My parents were role models for me in that they both just really loved what they did. Mm. For them, work was what you are. It's what you do. It's what you're good at. Mm-hmm. You don't devote, every hour of the day to it, but it's just, it's something that you have chosen, or it's chosen you, and it's a good fit. And so they always just told us, do what you want. Be happy. We just want you to be happy. And to me, and I think to both my sisters, that was sort of a handicap, because we went on to try on lots of different things that just didn't seem to be a perfect fit. And so whereas, I learned a lot of good things from them, and I thought, that they led exemplary lives, I do feel that it kind of left me in a bad position, because I could never live up to that.
Exactly.
I could never be as happy as they were.
I think first of all, people who tend to be happy, it's not so much the job. They tend to view life as a glass with the glass half full.
That's true.
And mm-hmm. I think that really, that ultimately, almost all work, if you rely on it making you happy all the time, you're never going to be. That's not a realistic expectation. You know, I think work needs to be viewed as worthy in as long. I mean, I'm not saying you should be in pain or have loud clanging noises or breathe carcinogenic air or any of that crap, but within very wide boundaries, all productive ethical work should be good enough. You're not supposed to have an orgasm when you're working. It's not that kind of standard. I think the whole self-help industry about do what you love, follow your passion, as you said, in your case, sets you up for unrealistic expectations and inevitably doesn't work. I look at all of the performers. I spend a lot of my avocational time with performers. And let me tell you, no matter how successful you are on the stage or whatever, it ultimately, and it's considered the coolest career, following your dreams, all this stuff, ultimately, you're not going to be any happy. We see how many suicides and drug addictions and, you know, Lindsay Lohan syndrome. You know, she's so unhappy despite her success. She's going to go shoplift? Give me a break. I think ultimately we cannot expect. I think European, I have a lot of European friends. My European friends ridicule Americans for this notion that we need to be happy all the time. We need to be upbeat and that the jobs need to make me passionate. You know, life just isn't that way. The woman who takes care of my mom is from Russia. And I think she's got a better sense of balance about what life is supposed to be. It's not fun working with my mom. My mom now is slowing down. She's got issues. But Olga, who's the woman, doesn't expect it to be fun. She knows it's the rewarding thing to do. It makes her a living. She's doing honorable good work. I think that's a healthier mindset. What do you think?
I think that you're absolutely right. It's taken me 40 years to realize that that no job is perfect. And that there were I'm sure there were things that my parents didn't particularly like about what they had to do. But, you know, taken all together, it was a fulfilling life. And so I think I have been too picky. I've complained too much. I've been looking for perfection. And I read somewhere recently that lots of people on their deathbeds realize that happiness is a choice. Well, I'm glad I didn't have to wait that long. To realize it for myself.
You know, I want to thank you for the call. You know, I think rolling with every job, I am very fortunate. I have a great work life, right? I've got career counseling is so pleasurable to me, relatively speaking. It's not stressful. I know what I'm doing. I'm doing it a long time. Doing this radio show is a real privilege, you know, but there's still crap that happens. But what's critical is you roll with it. The sense of gratitude, I'm not a Christian, but the notion of gratitude is a very Christian notion and is really useful. You know, when crap happens, really trying to remember, say, it's not always supposed to be pleasant. You've got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. When not all my clients are always compliant and thankful and all that. You know, but instead of getting annoyed, as much as I can, I'm not perfect, believe me, I do, you know, but as much as possible, having that sense of gratitude as kind of the safety net, as the barrier, as the whatever you want to call it, the foam rubber between the trapeze and the floor, gratitude's really important. Before we go back to the phones, I want to share one more tip that is a little less lofty that my father taught me. He says, Martin, always, he didn't use the word upsell, but again, he didn't tell me these things, but I watched him. When a customer went into his little store and they wanted a pair of sunglasses, and by the way, did you know that Ray-Ban sunglasses, my father sold them, they were $1.98. They're just sunglasses. It's a branding thing. Now it's a big deal. Ray-Ban. But they were $1.98. So someone would come in for $1.98 pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses. And my father, maybe a little too pushy, but he would try to not let him leave the store and try to sell him other stuff. Upselling, now, you know, there's been books written about selling. It's important to upsell. They give it a technical name. But it's much easier to sell to an existing customer than to get a new one. And that's a lesson he taught me. And if you are, especially if you're self-employed or you're a salesperson or anything like that, you realize that your existing customer base is one of the greatest treasures you have. Rather than relentlessly going after new customers, ask yourself, how could I better serve and, yes, make more profit, that is upsell, your existing customer? What new product, what new service could you provide? So that was a lesson I learned from him. Okay, phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco. Either you want to share a lesson you learned from your father or your mother, or you would like my career help. I do these things called 3-minute career makeovers or workovers, and it's whether you're self-employed, employed by somebody else, unemployed, making lots of money but still unhappy, making no money and terrified, afraid of losing your job. You got a work problem? I can usually help. 415-841-4134 is the number at Work with Marty Nemco. 415-841-4134. And now back to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. There were several people in my life when I was younger that made an impression on me. And my parents, my father in particular, would say, it doesn't matter what you do, it's how you do it that counts. Mm. And quality of work and just doing your best. Now, this was a half-truth for him. He wanted me to do more than I did. But also, I came from a large family. There were seven of us, so I really enjoyed the group process and working as a team. And also with my mother, after having so many children, she went back to school to finish her degree. The third person, when I was a teenager, I got a job at one of the first coffee shops in San Francisco. Mm. And the woman who owned it had, she was from Germany, not that that necessarily would matter, but she was, I would say, strict, but very fair. And again, the quality of your work and became very important to me. And I look back now and I realize that that is a thread that has brought me happiness, I'd say.
Yeah.
And that I can look back. At one point, I was parking cars in college, which was very unusual back then. But I got a lot of pride, I guess is the word, and joy in doing a really good job.
Exactly. You know, but there's always a I always like to present the other side. I love it, too. You know, right now I'm coaching this woman, Jeffrey Givens, and we are using as a bench, she's a singer, a performer, we're using as a benchmark the finest performances in the world. You know, we're looking at Queen Latifah's performance video, YouTube videos, and Kristen Chenoweth and those people, and it's exciting and fun to have her aim for, like, world class. But on the other hand, so many employers are not willing to pay for perfection because perfection takes so much time. It's like my example is, you know, if I'm hiring somebody to put in a new window to frame in a new window in my house, you know, if he's super perfectionistic, it's going to take four times as long, and it's not going to be that much better. The 16th of a millimeter that doesn't fit right, he can cover with caulk. I don't need to have it fit perfectly. And yet, so it's always a balance between when can you be perfectionistic and when do you have to be time effective, which is a very important term. What's your reaction to that?
I agree, but it's not so much in being perfectionist. It's doing the best job you can. And from that, you learn about what your limitations are and who you are and what you... It gives you directions in which you can go if you're aware of that and you think in that way, which I tended to do. And so that, I think, following my heart, I guess, or my center, and that's a little vague, I know, but... That's what's worked for me.
Yeah, see, for me, again, just presenting the other side, I could write much better quality articles if I simply said I'm going to create the best article I can. But when it goes through my head, I've now had 1,000 articles published, and I like to think they're not crap, but they are an attempt to strike the balance between what I want to take, let's say, for a given, I'm a columnist now at The Atlantic. I want to spend 6-8 hours, something like that, writing a column. I say, what is the best job I can do within 6 or 8 hours? Rather than, oh, because if I wrote the best article I could, it could take me weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
I make the decision that the most good accrues from my striking that balance. I'm always thinking about time effectiveness rather than the best or the worst. Except with Jeffrey, my that singer. I want it because the field of performing is so competitive. I feel for her to have a chance. We've got to aim for her being a superstar. But in most things, though, I think we're wiser to be, you know, aim at cost effectiveness and time effectiveness. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for your call. We've got a lot of lines lighted up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, Marty. Good to talk to you. Listen to your show a lot.
Thank you.
Really like it.
Go ahead.
Funny you should talk about that, but what you're talking about, because I am working now and I am self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been self-employed all of my life. My father was self-employed, a builder contractor back east. My grandfather came over from Italy in the early 1900s and, you know, became a self-employed entrepreneur, a mason contractor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, owned a house, sent his kids to school and whatever. And here I am with, you know, college educated and grew up in the suburbs, had every thing I could ever want growing up. And here I am, I'm working Sundays, and which isn't a bad thing, but I just wanted to say that self-entrepreneurship, self-employment isn't always great.
Oh, it's not easy. It is not easy.
There's some flexibility, but boy, people still, you know, want to devalue your labor.
Yeah.
You always have an employer if you're, you know, whoever you're working for. And, you know, that's basically what I wanted to say.
Yeah, they say you've got flexibility. Yeah, you can work either 12 hours a day you want.
Or you go 3 months without working.
Yeah. What also, you know, I a couple of things I want to say. Number one, you said your dad was a filter contractor. Right?
He was a building contractor.
A building contractor. Oh, and a mason. You know, one of my favorite phrases is that status is the enemy of contentment. Very often, I've said this on the radio show a lot, but it's really critical. If you're willing to forego prestige and work where the competition is, you're not dealing with Harvard MBAs when you're dealing in the area of masonry contracting. If you're good, and this is the other point, you choose your customers carefully. A lot of self-employed people get in trouble by taking all the business that comes in and what I call C-level client, the ones who are a pain in the butt, who, as you say, don't respect you, don't pay you that well, or maybe will try to avoid paying you, and you know, they say, oh, you didn't do this quite right, I'm only paying you 50%. You got to be a good enough marketer that you end up having good enough customers that you're not getting screwed all the time. Are you doing a good enough job of marketing so that you can have some choice among your customers?
No, I am not.
That's what you've got to do, dude.
Yeah.
What kind of work do you do?
I do remodeling.
Okay.
I am not high-end remodeling.
Good.
Nor will I do low-end remodeling. I'm somewhere in the middle.
And where, if there was a real sweet spot, what's the kind of work you do really well and maybe do it a little faster than others so that you can make a little more profit, you're not spending so much time, but you're good at it and you also love. Is there a particular, you know, I'm really hot, for example, these days on the building of in-law units, converting attics and basements and spare rooms into in-law units, because these days families are having to live together. Very often your aging parents have to live with you. Do you specialize in something, or do you need a niche like the one I just described?
Well, here's my problem. I went to art school.
Uh-huh.
I went to the School of Visual Arts in New York, and I'm an artist.
I see.
And I work with my hands. I do all, you know, fine finished carpentry and stuff like that, and painting and tile work. So I'm not. That's where I'm hurt in this economy, is because the people that are my clients are the people who are suffering in this.
Right.
This
yeah. The middle and upper middle class.
I don't have quite the flexibility to go down to the level of
production work.
That's where I'm losing out. Plus, when I hire people, I pay them really well. And I can't exploit, I don't
right.
feel comfortable
Good. Yeah.
exploiting people.
Here's my other, you know, yeah. Very often people who struggle, what city do you live in, and what's the area you've been marketing in?
San Francisco.
You know, again, the competition is so ridiculous here. Are you willing to, you know, the quality of, in general, on average, many exceptions, but when you go into like the Central Valley or even the exurbs, the quality of workers isn't as available. Had you thought about contacting general contractors who are located in areas that don't have the kind of quality people we get in the Bay Area?
I'm thinking about what you're saying, and what I kind of have refused to do is to work for general contractors, because mm-hmm. they're the guys that really.
Who do you want to work for? So, okay, great. So
I want to work for, and I think my niche is working for individual homeowners, clients. I don't know if I just have to wait out and just struggle through this downturn till the market comes back.
I'm not going to bank on that, dude. I am not banking on this market turning around fast enough. You've got to deal with the pretend that the market is going to stay as it is. You've got to figure out, if your customer base is middle-class people who live in a certain area, you've got to do everything from the most guerrilla kind of marketing, that is putting flyers around, to writing, you know, maybe creating a little YouTube video of yourself demonstrating what you've done, some samples of your work, giving talks at libraries or churches or so, you know, my wife is a member of Rotary, and every week they have speakers come in and talk about whatever. You could come in and talk about the art of X certain kind of, you know, the art, because you're an artist kind of guy, of painting beyond the functional. You know, you've got to think about some marketing or you're going to struggle. I don't think you need to, you can't afford, especially if you're 60, to wait for the market to turn around, because that's certainly an open question as to how much it will turn around, if at all. Make sense?
Makes sense, Marty. I'll take that advice under consideration.
All right, Guy. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks for talking to me.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help, or what do you want to share with us?
Oh, mine is one of my mother's life lessons.
Oh, great. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. She was a bookkeeper for a small business.
First you said mother, and then you said he. Are you talking about your mother or your father?
Oh, my mother.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
And at a time when a lot of women didn't work.
Okay.
So,
right.
She was, you know, a real good worker, whether at home or at business. But her life lesson was, if someone is doing honest work, then it's good work, and the person should be respected and in
practice. It's my core belief. I mean, I drove a taxi cab, even though, you know, it was totally, being Jewish, you know, that's something you don't do. Jews become doctors and lawyers and
all that stuff.
But, you know, I drove a cab for 4 years and loved it. I was a piano player for weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff like that. Not prestige, not what you're supposed to do. But, yes, all work, including dishwasher. If I were broke and I had no other alternative than to be a dishwasher or take, you know, money from the taxpayer to support me, I'd be washing dishes until my hands were wrinkly.
Yeah, my mom said, if you're ever out of work, think of either being a bookkeeper, which I couldn't do because I'm dyslexic. Mm-hmm. She tried, but I couldn't do that. But or do restaurant work, because you can always have a job as a bookkeeper, and in restaurant work you'll at least be able to eat.
Exactly.
You know, but in practice, she put, you know, this saying in whenever we were driving or walking and there was a taxi cab, any kind of worker,
mm-hmm.
Truck or cars, and she would say, let them go first because they're working.
Yeah, I love those people.
A sign of respect.
Please, dear listeners, do not think I'm just saying this for effect. I swear, when I see a hardworking person who is doing something that has no prestige, I have more respect for them than I have for a big-time lawyer. I have plenty of, most of my friends, yes, are more likely to be big-time lawyers. But in my heart of hearts, somebody who maybe born genetically wasn't that smart or grew up in a neighborhood where the parents weren't that, you know, brilliant or upwardly aspirational, and there they are despite that, working on some low-prestige, probably low-pay job, you know, the little restaurant owner who gets up at 3 in the morning to buy produce so that I can go in there for lunch and for $10 have a lunch in my Chinese restaurant that I love on College Avenue. I love those people. Make sense?
And it does. And if someone has a hard time perceiving that, because sometimes we're not raised in families that have a broad view of things, you know, like what you were saying.
Yeah.
And if they really have trouble with that concept, then whatever job it is that someone's doing that they're looking down on, then they should just pretend no one's doing that job and they have to do their job that they do and they feel good about doing, but they also have to do that other job because it needs to be done, and then maybe they'll look at the person with other eyes.
Yep, good technique, and I'm just looking up at the clock and I'm looking at with these eyes and see the show's over, so thank you for the call. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Maher, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers, workovers, whatever you want to call them on callers. And my wife, Barbara Nemco, and I are going to perform work-related scenes from some of our greatest plays. Not Barbara and mine, but America's and the world's greatest plays. Plus, we're going to debate how to address your call-in work-life problems. So that's until next Sunday. This is Marty Nemco reminding you that we do find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.